Welcome. We are so excited to finally have and see all of your wonderful faces here today. We have been planning this for quite some time, and we're just so excited to finally have so many of you here. We know that so many of you have traveled so far, and we're just glad everyone arrived safely. And for those of you who don't know who I am, I know many of you, but if you don't know who I am, I'm Jennifer O'Neill. I'm the University Historian and Archivist at the University of Oregon, and I am one of the facilitators for today's gathering. In addition to, I want to introduce two of my amazing colleagues, Camille Callison, who is from the University of Manitoba, and Jonathan Pringle, raise your hand, Northern Arizona University. So today we will be your facilitators and kind of just guiding the conversation and the discussions today. And just want to thank them publicly so much for being willing to be the facilitators along with myself. I couldn't have put this together, or I don't think it would be as a great a discussion without having them here, because they're really going to bring in some different perspectives and also perspectives from Canada to ensure that we're getting a good balanced perspective. So, but before I move on, I also just wanted to take a few minutes to honor the traditional homelands of whose peoples we're meeting on today, which is the Piscataway and Tayac people, and just honor them today because it's an honor to be here and to meet, particularly on this topic. And I also just wanted to highlight a couple things that as we are meeting here today, and just to highlight a few things that are of importance today, because I just want to remind people how important this topic is and how important it is to have a certain mindset as we go throughout the day. Because really the goal of why we're meeting today, as you'll see from the different presentations, is to reflect on what's been accomplished with the protocols, but also to determine some next steps. But the biggest thing is to just have some really great open discussions, respectful discussions, and ones where we can have a lot of shared ideas, and also just ensuring that everyone feels very at ease, and this can be an open place. So what I would ask is that you just take a few minutes to kind of center yourself, to prepare your minds for the hopefully wonderful discussions that we'll be having today. And I was lucky enough this past spring to be able to attend a workshop that was hosted by Simon Fraser University up in Vancouver. And while they're one of the professors from the First Nations University of Canada, Willie Ermine, he said so many amazing things while we were at this gathering, but one of the things that really resonated with me is he said to always be aware of your consciousness and to keep your minds and hearts open at all times to these discussions that so many of our ancestors and those who we are doing this for are always with us, and that we should be mindful of that. In addition, because we're talking about ethics and ethical care of these collections, one thing he also said is, quote, is ethical space is about the encounter of strangers. And even though I know so many of us know each other, there are also some of us who we don't know or who we're going to be working with that are strangers to us. But it's in these spaces where we can have those important discussions. And when we are having these discussions as well, it's almost always the longest journey can be making those connections from our head to our heart. And I really believe that's true, that for many of us, that's not a challenge. We understand that, but it's also trying to help others to understand why this work is so important. So I just wanted to give those introductory comments to ensure that we can all have coming from a place of understanding and respect for one another, particularly as we go into this. So before we get to our first guest speaker, which is Karen, I just wanted to go over a few just housekeeping things and kind of lay out what the goals are of today and the schedule as well. Everybody has an agenda on their in front of them, but just to generally give you an idea of why we're gathering here today and what we're going to be doing. So the morning, this morning sessions, or we're just going to have some general information sessions. And as noted, we're going to have some overviews from both the United States and Canada perspectives and recommendations, as well as highlighting some of the new issues presented by the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We're also going to be highlighting the work that's been done by Beth and Natalia, who are going to be sharing their research work about collaborations utilizing the protocol. So we're very excited to hear about their work. And when I sent out information, I linked to their article, so hopefully you all have had a chance to read through that. And then we'll also be having a session about incorporating the protocols into the curriculum and highlighting how some professors have been incorporating the document into the curriculum and how that's been received and feedback from them as well. And then we'll all have a lunch together. We're going to be meeting up at the restaurant that's here in the hotel, and we'll take you up there when we do that. And we're having a longer lunch to ensure that there's time for everybody to get to know one another, because I know, and Israel will probably hear from Karen when she talks as well, at these gatherings, food is very important, and it's a great way to actually connect with one another. So we want to make sure there's lots of time for everyone to talk and get to know one another over the break. But then the afternoon is when we'll actually have some breakout discussion groups. We'll have three breakout sessions, and hopefully some of you have been able to sign up for those groups ahead of time. If you haven't, that's okay, and we can split you up based upon where we have some room in the other sessions. And then the idea for that is to have some general discussions about different sections of the protocols, where gaps are, where we can fill those with either updates or other case studies or any other outcomes that we need to develop for these areas of the protocols. And then we'll all reconvene together and share our feedback, suggestions, and any next steps, and meet also with the Museum Summit group at the end of the day, which we'll meet with them actually downstairs. And the idea for that was to ensure that, there's probably a lot of overlap with some of the core issues that we're talking about, so we wanted to make sure we were collaborating and meeting together to learn from one another. So that's kind of the idea for today. And I also wanted to highlight some of the goals for today as well. So even though this is kind of our general structure, I wanted to highlight some of the goals. So everybody's kind of on the same page of why we're doing this, why are we here, and what are we hoping to accomplish? Because I know we're only here for one day, we only have a certain amount of time, but we're hoping that this could be just the first of some important discussions that will continue on. So the first is, of course, highlighting these major accomplishments and milestones that the protocols has achieved over the past 10 years, which, as Karen will also highlight, we can't believe it's been almost 10 years since we drafted the protocols. But of course, to also review how the protocols have been or are being implemented in various ways through collaborations, curriculum, case studies, and then reviewing also other additional guidelines that have been developed in other areas in Canada, and how we have overlap and how we can work together to bridge some of those gaps so that the boundaries of our two different countries are not so distinct, but that we're working together for the same goals. So again, how we can collaborate to serve all of the Indigenous peoples of North America. And of course, one of the major areas that we want to focus on is reviewing and identifying gaps for updating new sections, updating wording, areas that we see that really need updating or improvement. And also any other next steps that we can develop that we can see as producing something from this group, whether that's updating sections in the protocols, or if it's case studies or any other sort of publications or areas that we can focus on. And as I mentioned, really the goal of today, even though we're having some general presentations in the morning, We want you to feel that this is more of an open-ended discussions, day-long session. We want you to ask questions throughout, engage in difficult issues that that arise, and really be able to have some important discussions. Having open, candid discussions and in a respectful setting. So, and one thing to remember as well, that this is done in a collaborative group effort. And so you don't have to worry that one of your opinions or your perspective is going to be shared in any way without, of course, your consent. This is definitely a group effort. We wouldn't do that without any of your permission. And again, as I mentioned, this is just the first step in an ongoing conversation that we hope will last beyond just today, but though we'll be able to continue through via email and Google Docs and other products that we determine that we want to continue at the end of the day. So, and the reason I want to do that or focus on that is because I know we're only just here for one day. There's only so much we can accomplish. So we're really hoping that we can continue the conversation. I also know that there are many of us here that either don't know each other or that this may be the first time that we're meeting. So one thing I wanted to do quickly also is just have some basic introductions quickly, if we could go around. And if you could just focus on some of these, of course, your name, where you're from, any tribal affiliation, and if you want to pick one of these questions to ask, we just want to know, why are you here? Why did you want to contribute? And what you're hoping to get out of today? And this will help us to kind of gauge where everybody's at. And also, if you have any questions, just let us know. But if we could just start and go around, whoever wants to start. Well, thanks, everybody, for introducing yourself and just sharing a little bit about your background and where you're coming from. It's going to be really great to get to know you all better and to hear all of your different perspectives. And I'll just also share a little bit more about myself as well. As I said, I am the university historian and archivist at the University of Oregon. I've been there for about 3 years. Prior to that, I was at the National Museum of the American Indian as the head of the Archives Center. And I'm also a member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde in Oregon. And as Rob had alluded to and mentioned, that I was also one of the original drafters of the protocols. So it's through that that I've that's been the focus of my work, and my research has been the advocacy and work surrounding the protocols and ensuring that these issues are brought to the forefront of the profession. So I've been engaged in that work ever since I first graduated, and continue to focus on this work and publish, and hope that I can make some inroads in ensuring that the perspectives of Indigenous communities are focused on. So so we're actually going to turn now to Karen to try to see if we can get the her. We have her on Skype. It might only work for audio. But before I went into that, I just wanted to show you a few slides, because this is actually the group that gathered in 2006 at Northern Arizona University. And this is Karen here in the front, who's going to be talking with us. And you can see Rob and I in there as well. So I just like to show this picture because it was an amazing group to be a part of. And I also just want to thank Karen profusely for the amount of work that she did to bring the group together, and also for the amazing opportunity that she gave us to be a part of the group. When this happened, I had only been in the profession maybe 4 or 5 years, and she gave me an amazing opportunity to be a part of this group. So I really can't thank her enough for all that she's done, both for this initiative, but also just on a personal level. She's a very good friend of mine. So. And just wanted to remind you, I know hopefully everybody did their homework and has read the protocols, and but I just wanted to remind you that these were the main goals of the protocols here. Is they were developed and created based on a need that there were no guidelines for, particularly for those collections that were at non-tribal repositories at university, historical societies, any repositories that had Indigenous collections, but who tribal communities didn't have a say in how those were being collected. So these are the main goals of why they were developed, to really build new interactions between tribal and non-tribal repositories, but bring into context the ideas of respect and recognition of these communities, and how through those collaborations you can build the reciprocity that is so needed through the shared stewardship of the collections and advocating for Native American values and perspectives. And again, just some of the main concepts were honoring the Native American communities as sovereign governments, that each tribe, community, and band is unique, and that these guidelines, although hoping that they would be implemented in all respects, we realized they were non-binding, but for the benefit of non-tribal repositories and tribal communities. And adopting and adapting the culturally responsive recommendations to suit local needs, we knew that these would need to be changed and updated based on each community's needs. And of course, there were the 10 sections that are in the document that we'll actually discuss later. And for those of you who don't know who Karen is, she's the previous head of Special Collections and University Archives at Northern Arizona University. And of course, she's the one that coordinated and facilitated the gathering. So without further ado, I'm going to try to connect this to see if we can actually get this to work. So hold on momentarily. And I don't know, like I said, if we'll be able to have video, but we'll definitely have audio. So hold on 1 second. Karen, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Hold on, I have to connect my computer. And is your video working?
My video is on, but I don't, I just see, a box without my face in it, but I do have my video on.
Okay, hold on, maybe I turned it, maybe that's why. Well, you can
see
you.
I
see you.
Which, it's early in the morning here, so don't look too closely.
We just have the spinning wheel.
Oh yeah?
We don't have your I could try to reconnect again, but we definitely have your audio.
That's just fine.
Okay.
Everyone would have the treat of watching my cat play. I'm gonna try not to let her shut the computer again.
Okay, it would be the cat we have video. You connected and we're all good. So if you wanna start,
right.
The floor is all yours.
Perfect. So I began by saying Loloma and Yat'e, and if I say anything more in either Hopi or Navajo, I will tell you that I'm an old white woman whose mother used to dress me funny, most of which is true. I once made a language mistake during the Navajo Treaty Project, 1998 to 1999. This was a project of Northern Arizona University, the Navajo Nation, and the National Archives. And I told a group of fourth grade students that I was an old woman instead of talking about the old paper, and they laughed a lot. My family and Jonathan Pringle, who's with you, will attest that I tell stories like a pelican. So I surge forward and then loop around and draft on the audience's wing root fairing, and eventually maybe get to the point. But here is the point for today. I am delighted, make that elated, that the protocols are alive and well after nearly 10 years and primed for revision, that we have moved on at least to a profession to some level of understanding, if not always acceptance, of indigenous rights regarding information resources and traditional cultural expressions and different knowledge. We are all only temporary custodians, and ideally, we should be supportive and connected stewards in our human endeavors. You will have a full day of robust and significant discussions. Tough issues remain, especially in the realm of managing culturally sensitive information. I applaud you all and give thanks for today's leadership. And I'm laughing, the cat is now on my head. It's good you don't have video. By Jennifer and Jonathan and Camille, and I deeply value this First Nations involvement and presence. I do want to acknowledge all the contributors, my 18 colleagues, and I'm not sure if Robert is there, but Jennifer and Robert in particular, who participated in the development of the protocols in 2006. My role was simply one of facilitator, scribe, and the accidental fundraiser. I was very grateful to my university for a 6-month sabbatical and the opportunity to meet with 3 of the 4 authors of the Australian protocols in Australia. And then all overseas who responded so positively. It was just an amazing time. I remain that the protocols needed and continue to deserve a strong Indigenous perspective. I also would like to take just a moment to remember our devoted and departed colleagues and supporters of the protocols, Allie Krebs and Ann Mossman. The protocols, with the recommended culturally responsive best practices for non-tribal libraries and archives and Indigenous communities, filled a void a decade ago and began a dialogue, at times perhaps a debate, despite any ongoing controversy. That was our primary goal. And along with my friends and contributors, I enjoy being labeled a social justice archivist. I'm proud of it. The incorporation of the protocols in academic curricula and in recent archival pleases me no end. I did not know at the fretted. If 19 of us, 15 Indigenous participants and 4 non-tribal archivists, historians, anthropologists, could come to consensus in the span of 2.5 days, but we did. It was a gamble and well worth the risk. I wanted to note that we've taken some heat over the years for destroying the audio recordings of our deliberations. From both the Native and non-Native scholars after the protocols were drafted. I personally believe that we would not have achieved that first iteration of the protocols if the participants were not able to speak freely and wrestle with the difficult, thorny issues. So I'm pleased to hear that again today, your conversations will be among your group, and that will, I think, allow you to move forward more quickly. John Fleckner, Tim Erickson, other key SAA figures have done a really laudable job of reaching out to tribal archivists, but I found the Native voice lacking in much of the archival literature at that time in the United States, so the 1980s, the 1990s, the early 2000s. I attended a presentation of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Protocols for Libraries, Archives, and Information Sciences at an SAA annual meeting, and that sparked the fire for me, along with working with the Hopi Tribe and Navajo Nation since 1990. And then, okay, that and prodding from the marvelous Cherie Bonaparte, who's Mohawk and Akwesasne. She asked me point blank, what was I going to do about the lack of respect for Native American concerns at those SAA meetings? In Japan, and here comes the cat, whoops, hang on. In Japan, a tradition exists of many Zen-inspired old age wisdom four-character idioms. And my favorite, and here it goes, I believe it's pronounced Sotoku Doje. It's involves when it is time for a baby chick to hatch, the mother taps on the shell to break it to assist the chick. And the chick also needs to tap back. And the lesson of the idiom is that do things now, timing is everything. I know you all came to this conference with open hearts and minds. I joked with Jennifer yesterday that the protocols should have a section on sharing food and maybe reciprocal social dances, because food and cultural exposure are excellent ways to build relationships. And so my parting thought for you this morning is do it now. The timing is right. That's it.
Well, it was wonderful to be able to have Karen share some remarks with us. So what I wanted to share is just a few, highlight some issues, of course, that I've been working on or that I've published about. And one of these quotes I like to highlight is from William Hagen in 1978, where he wrote, "To be an Indian is to have non-Indians control your documents from which other non-Indians write their versions of your history." And the reason I like this quote is because this is really the foundation of why one of the reasons why the protocols were created is because you have this legacy of Native American materials, archives, ensconced in displaced repositories and historic trauma surrounding them. And because of that, then you have this perpetual history that is ongoing, where it is not being done by a Native perspective. And while there were many historians, anthropologists, ethnographers who were studying our tribal communities and our ways of life, and who may or may not have had good intentions, they were in fact writing their version of what they were encountering, and not always accurate, and then also depositing those field notes and records and repositories. So the goal of the protocols, or the reasons why we were creating this, is to ensure that that could bring in more Indigenous perspective, to have actual Indigenous people writing their own history from either those documents or other documents. But and so we've had amazing things happen, like the development of tribal archive records, repositories, and training. And as Karen alluded to, there was the amazing work done by John Fleckner in the mid-80s. But as her and I also talked yesterday, this was coming from the larger archive profession saying, we have the information, we know how the right protocols and guidelines for you to follow in addressing your collections. And so they were trying to help and provide advice, but again, it was coming from a Western way of managing collections, and not necessarily from a traditional way of knowing and how tribal communities would want to actually manage their own records. So there have been other things like that I mentioned in a couple of my publications about the Northwest projects and the SWORP collection that's at the University of Oregon. So these are just some examples of how these collections that have been donated at these types of repositories are trying to bring on a new life and create this indigenous knowledge. And then, of course, we have amazing training and professional development that's been happening over the past 10 years as well, of course, with ATOM and other amazing organizations. But it wasn't until we actually had the development of the protocols that we actually made that connection with these collections at non-tribal repositories. And so luckily we were able to have official endorsement by the protocols by a variety of different repositories and organizations. So, and this is just a handful. And it's just important to make that connection that, yes, we had this amazing work going on surrounding training and education, but we really needed to ensure that the training and education surrounding those collections at non-tribal repositories was brought into this conversation and continued. And of course, in one of the publications, I also mentioned some of the response from SAA, which I don't want to focus too much on this. This is just to highlight that the protocols were brought for endorsement to the Society of American Archivists back in 2007. And from that, although they were officially not endorsed, which I'll show you on the next slide, it started an interesting conversation, a debate that occurred within the profession that created a task force, and where we also had each year a discussion of the protocols. And actually, Terry Baxter in the back there was also very instrumental in overseeing a lot of that work. So thank you so much for all you did with ensuring that we had those forums and those discussions. And that brought up a lot of issues. And from that, again, we held those three meetings from 2009 to 2011. And we submitted a final report on the work that we did. And from that, another outcome was the creation of the Cultural Property Heritage Working Group, which now I am the chair of, and some of us in this room actually member Beth. So good things happened out of that, even though the protocols were not endorsed. And what I like to focus on is that, again, this wasn't ever a goal of the protocols. I mean, it was something that was discussed at this larger organization, but this wasn't our goal to have it endorsed by all these different organizations. Sure, it's great if it is, but the goal was to begin these conversations and to see them being utilized. And just because they're not endorsed by a larger organization doesn't mean, of course, tribal communities or non-tribal repositories shouldn't be using them. And as you'll see from the many examples you're here today, they're alive and well, they're being utilized. And so And this isn't even really a focus we have right now. It could be, or it may be, but it's just not where we are putting a lot of our energy. Our energy is here today in this room, being able to talk about these issues. And just some to highlight some concerns and perceptions outside of Indian country, this is where a lot of the major concerns lied, where there were some pushback about who are tribal representatives for these collections, the issues surrounding cultural sensitivity, varying Native perspectives, of course, copyright and traditional knowledge, and then balancing access and privacy. Again, we know these are very complex issues, and we never said there were going to be specific and answers to all of these. However, the importance and the purpose behind the protocols was beginning to have these conversations. We've, of course, had a lot of case studies come out of the implementation, and you'll hear more today. And we have examples here from NAU, American Philosophical Society, NMAI, NAA, so we have some great examples here in this room, and I'm sure we'll hear of others. And this is just to point out that they have been also endorsed by a variety of different organizations who are implementing them, and there are even more case studies out there. And, of course, as we're going to talk about that the protocols have been implemented in the curriculum and in training, and again, this is just a sampling. And of course, we've had recent developments like the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples that we're trying to focus on and determine how we can implement this into the protocols document in some way, whether that's an additional section or highlighting different sections of UNDRIP that relate to the work in the protocols. Just as a quick highlight of kind of from speaking with Karen yesterday and then also just reflecting on the work that needs to be done, I just wanted to highlight a few goals or kind of thoughts I had, again, about kind of a vision or what I'm hoping that we can work toward. One thing is that when I did go to that one meeting I was alluding to earlier in Vancouver this past spring, one thing, it was a meeting about Indigenous research and having certain protocols for Indigenous research, particularly, you know, the focus was in Canada. But from that, there was an interesting conversation about collaboration. And there, the conversation is always, you know, we're having a great conversation about that. But what happens beyond that? And rather than having a conversation about collaboration and consultation, let's move to a conversation about the bigger issue of consent. And that consent is not a noun, but a process. And I would also say that about consultation in conjunction with collaboration. So just something to think about how we're thinking about collaboration and consultation. And that, of course, Indigenous traditional ways of knowing should be at the center of this process. And I alluded to this earlier when I'd mentioned, of course, about the amazing work that was done in the 80s by John Flechner and the group that did that. It was amazing work, and they were focusing on trying to assist tribal communities, but I actually think it should be the other way around. It should be the Indigenous communities informing non-tribal repositories about how to care for these collections. And of course, always focusing and continuing and to put at the center the stewardship and community curation, which you're going to also hear other examples of this. But I think another is that the methodology surrounding the protocols that, particularly within the larger archival profession, is based in this idea of postmodern, post-custodial archival theory, which at SAA this year, we actually had, I was on a debate panel just about this topic and talked a lot about the protocols and how this fits into that. And the reason I touch on this or bring this up is because that is one of the arguments that I try to use when so many people within the larger profession want to say, well, what is this based in? And of course, want to talk about these higher theoretical issues. So I really like to focus on that and remind people that this is a larger issue and that Native communities aren't the only ones focusing on this. A lot of ethnic archives and the social justice work that many communities are engaged in is based in this work. And so we are just one community trying to do this work. And of course, also the idea behind participatory community archives and social justice archiving that we've already mentioned. And overall, of course, the larger profession, I don't think we as tribal archivists or those working with tribal archives need to evolve. I think we are there. It's this larger profession that needs to evolve and expand these theoretical and practical frameworks. So it's always a challenge because we need to balance the own work that we need to do in our with our own collections, but also trying to advocate for that work, but trying to have a good balance with that so we don't focus too heavily on it, but ensure that it is work that we are engaged in. And of course, accepting different ways of knowing and managing collections, which this is kind of a given when you talk about Indigenous traditional ways of knowing, but ensuring, again, just coming back to that, that for me, as I reread the protocols, and as we meet in the discussion sessions later this afternoon, that should really be at the core and focus of our process. So I just wanted to highlight those and make sure we had some time for questions and discussion before we turn to Camille and Jonathan and Alicia. So I know that's a lot of information we just threw at you this morning. And again, it was more of just kind of an overview to provide you more background about the protocols and kind of where we're at and where we're going. But just wanted to open it up if you had any questions, both for myself, but mainly also for Karen, if you had any questions for her, or if you just had any questions in general about how the day will go.